If I had the time and money to do a birding big year, I would travel all over the world searching far and near.
Thank you for tuning in to Hannah and Eric Go Birding, a podcast by birders for birders.
I'm Hannah and he's Eric.
We created this podcast to share adventures, sometimes misadventures, and opinions that we have on different birding topics. We're definitely not experts, and anything that we discuss that might be controversial, I want you to remember, their own opinions, they might be different from yours. Do you like the way I said might be different there? Might be different?
Might be different from yours?
Yeah, there's a little twist on the way to pronounce that word.
Yeah, I like it. After doing almost, 150 episodes, we gotta switch things up here and there.
We gotta pronounce things in a different way, I guess.
Yeah. So, how have you fared through this eBird outage?
I'm okay. I only have 7 lists on my phone right now that are that are causing me to get the itch.
Yeah. Last night, I was sitting outside because you were listening to a city council meeting. I just, couldn't. And I was sitting there, on the deck, and there was chickadees and juncos all over the place, and I was like, I want to make an eBird list. I don't usually get, a huge drive to do it.
Except for when you can't.
Yeah, exactly. How dare you tell me I can't do something.
Well, it's okay. So... tomorrow the 21st,
when this episode goes out, it'll be live. So
today the 21st, I guess, if you're listening to it when we come out, it'll be back up and going. I'll have submitted all of my lists and everything will be right with the world. it's not that big a deal. So their eBird is, the servers are down. This current outage is as they migrate all of the data over to another server for quicker accessibility and stuff like that. So there's a few of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology services are out right now, but it's not really that pertinent to talk about because by the time this episode comes out, they'll be back. So it's something that does happen at least once a year when they do the taxonomic update. And this is just an additional outage.
But I got
additional planned outage.
I got to give it to them. They did a great job of notifying us.
Oh, yeah.
That this was coming forward. I mean, they've been posting on social media for weeks in advance. Don't worry, it'll be back.
And they had essentially events all this these 2 days.
That was the other thing I was going to say. Yeah. I think it's really cool that they're
like, oh, since you can't eBird, maybe you should do these things with us.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. So good job, eBird. And other Cornell Lab of Ornithology programs.
The entire suite of Cornell Lab of Ornithology stuff.
Yeah. So we had somebody buy us some coffees.
Yes. So thank you, someone who bought us coffee. We really appreciate it. It's not something that we really are asking heavily about, but we really appreciate it. It's the only way that we allow people to support the show, I guess. Is that how you'd phrase it?
No, I wouldn't. That's what you did.
That's how I phrase it. We as we've said last time, we do this podcast because we love birding and we love sharing birding with people, and we want to broaden the knowledge base of what birding is about and how birding works and places to go and things to do and all that stuff. So,
and I think we realize,
we just like doing it.
I think we realize that we're not everybody's cup of tea, and if you enjoy our podcast, you know, mm-hmm. we appreciate it, but there's other podcasts, and
absolutely.
There's other things that aren't podcasts if you want to get into birding and check some of those out. And that's all to just say that if you would like to support us in our show, please feel free to buy us a coffee, and we appreciate everyone who has done so.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Absolutely.
Something that we talked about in our last episode was the new Dial a Birder thing that we're testing out.
Mm-hmm.
So that is basically I have a Google voicemail that you can call and you can ask a question, or you can tell us what's going on in your neck of the woods, or if there's something interesting that you think we should know about, you can give us a call and leave us a voicemail. We did have somebody call and leave a voicemail, but it was blank.
Uh-oh.
So I apologize to you if
maybe
that
was our error or their error.
Have no idea.
But we did not get the voicemail.
Yeah. So if you'd like to call in, and we may put your voicemail on the show, so just keep that in mind. But
or if you don't want it on the show, or if you just want us to answer the question or whatever.
Yeah.
It's really, really free form.
Super free form. So Dial a Birder, and the phone number there is 503-741-9306, and it's also in the show notes.
So there's another bit of news that was a shocker.
Oh, Eric and I were texting
5 or 6 days ago, less than a week ago.
So excited.
So we did an episode 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
around this time of year, 2 years ago, where we went on a cruise ship out of South Africa and all the way down to the mysterious and infamous now. I don't know if infamous.
I don't think it's infamous. It's just famous.
I was thinking infamous because of the National Geographic story, but the Marianne Islands. So there's two islands off the coast of South Africa, about halfway between South Africa and the Antarctica. And
in the world's roughest oceans.
And we went with BirdLife South Africa on this cruise, full of birders, full-size cruise ship. It was during COVID, so essentially a full-size cruise ship at half capacity, to go down and go for a fundraiser, to go view the islands from a distance and hear talks and all this stuff. We did a whole podcast episode about this 2 years ago. I think we've already shared it a couple of times on social media since the announcement of this, but they're doing this cruise again. This, what we thought was a once in a lifetime. We didn't think that they were going to be able to get permission to go again. They have gotten permission to go again. It's not only permission, but also cooperation of MSC Cruise Lines to do this, because
it's a full-size cruise ship.
It's a full-size cruise ship, and it's essentially not really taking a cruise ship out of service, but taking it away from where they normally go, because they don't normally go down this far south, down into the Southern Ocean. It's weird. You're not going to get your normal cruise ship passengers. It's just going to have to be birders. So BirdLife South Africa has to essentially guarantee to MSC that they're going to get X capacity full. And so it's a partnership between MSC Cruise Lines and BirdLife South Africa. And they were able to coordinate, and we have dates for 2025 that it is happening again.
Yeah, and it's just such a cool experience. So the time that we went was probably one of my most treasured birding memories. We had wandering albatross flying around the ship. It was absolutely incredible. And I also want to say we're not being paid by BirdLife South Africa or MSC or anything. We just had a fantastic time.
Yes.
And it was so cool to go and see these birds, you know, in their natural habitat. And it was
an essentially adventure. Up close.
And it was quite an adventure too. So we're very excited that they're going to be doing another one. And I'm trying to twist Eric's arm and save every dollar that I can to make him go with me because I have to be on that boat again.
And for Americans and probably for Europeans as well, the price tag for the ship, they just posted an estimate for what it is. It is actually not really that expensive in terms of what cruise ships typically charge for a berth. I can't remember exactly what the price is, but it was
for like an inside room, it was around like $1,700
for the room, not per person.
Yeah.
So $800 or say $150.
And beers were only like $3.
Of US, yeah. So it was surprise for 7 days. I think it's 7 days on a cruise ship. All the food you could want, seabirds. And yeah, it's honestly, it's the difficult part for us is getting there. That getting there is probably more, it's more expensive for us to get there than it is to go on 100%. A cruise. But having said that, it's very, very interesting. I'm still waffling, but I really want to go.
You're going.
I know. So
how much of a fight are you going to put up?
I'm not going to put up a fight. So January 2025, we've posted a couple times on social media about it. It is very exciting to see that they have been able to arrange for this to happen a second time.
Yeah, and when we were on it before, there was only a handful of Americans. So I know that we've probably put the bug in enough people's ears that there might be some more Americans going on.
If we go, maybe we won't be one of the only Americans there.
Yeah, we'll actually know some people on it.
Maybe.
So anyways, Moving on.
That was a long talk about news about that. So yeah. Anyways.
So I have two other podcasts.
Yes, you do.
And one of them is Women Birders Happy Hour, which I interviewed Brenda Sanchez, and that episode came out last week on March 14th. It was so fun to talk with her. She's a guide at Tranquilo Bay in Panama. So I'm hoping at some point we can go down and bird with her, because that would be very cool.
Tranquilo Bay sounds fantastic. It sounds like an adventure to get to, and then it's Panama, so it's just an adventure all around.
My other podcast is the Bird Nerd Book Club, and this episode that's coming out next week on March 28th is with Gretchen Newberry, whose book, The Nighthawk's Evening, Notes of a Field Biologist, came out a few years ago, and it was such an enjoyable read, so I'm excited to share Gretchen and her stories about nighthawks with you all. So you can check those podcasts out anywhere that you listen to podcasts.
Yeah. Okay, so quickly, we have some travel. We had some travel. We just got back from the San Diego Bird Festival, which happens at the end of February every year. Spring Chirp, we are going to be going to that in down in Weslaco, Texas, the southern tip of Texas down there. It's a spring bird festival down in the Rio Grande Valley. April 17th to the 20th in Weslaco. The Princess Cruise, the repositioning cruise that we're going on in mid-May, May 7th to the 11th. LA to Vancouver, lots of pelagics expected. Very excited about that. We are basically finalized now for Dean Hale Woodpecker Festival. The end of May to June 2nd, May 30th to June 2nd in Sisters, Oregon, which is Central Oregon. Lots and lots of woodpeckers. So it's 11 species of woodpeckers that we are anticipating seeing throughout our 3 days there. So very, very excited. Plus all the other desert species. It's not just woodpeckers. It's called Woodpecker Festival, but lots of other stuff. It's high desert species. Pretty fantastic. And then in September, Hannah is going on the Amazon Birding Expedition Brazil for Women. September 2024.
Yeah,
and almost halfway through this year.
And that trip has been filled up. So thank you to everyone who's participated. I'm excited. Yeah. It'll be fun. And Eric is going to do his own solo trip while during that same time frame.
Yeah, yeah. The husband of one of your guides is also a guide. So he
is going to be showing you around.
He's going to show me around to some similar places to where you're going. I think we'll be able to have enough compare and contrast to talk about for an episode.
Yeah, but I'm gonna way exceed you in lifers.
Oh, I imagine so. My eyes are not, I'm not as good at picking things out as you are. Like I will fully 100% admit it. You're spotting those raccoons left and right, and
you're so sweet. And then I also put Floctomerian on there because that's happening. Floctomerian 2.
Floctomerian part 2.
The flockening.
The reflockening.
So that brings us to our Bird Nerd giveaway. Eric, would you like to announce who is going to win some coffee cups from Land, Sea, and Sky that were generously donated to this Bird Nerd giveaway?
Sure, yeah. And the cups had kind of a pun on them, too. So we asked for people to send us their funny bird jokes and or puns. And we got a bunch, but one from Connor. When directing someone to a bird, I usually use cardinal directions. So it's good.
Very good. Like
there was a number of other good puns, and there was randomly selected, tossing an Excel spreadsheet. Connor is our winner for the month, so we will be in touch and get contact info for you and get you some coffee mugs.
Very good. So today we want to talk to you about digiscoping.
Yes, digiscoping.
So digiscoping is one of my favorite ways to take pictures because I have a spotting scope. I have a camera. Well, I have my phone. And
so you always have a camera.
Exactly.
You've always got your phone.
So phone plus plus spotting scope equal digiscoping.
Yes. So there are a number of different ways to digiscope. There is lots of different attachments that you can get, different adapters for your phone. Some of them are a case. Some of them are just something that clips straight to your phone itself, and then it clips on. It's basically whatever device it is, it's to hold the lens of your camera as close to the eyepiece as possible to whatever optic thing you want to take a picture through. So if it's binocular or scope or whatever it is, the best of these are the ones that are small and clip on easily and make it easy to transition from using your phone to not using your phone.
Yeah.
There's tons of different brands. We use PhoneScope. It's a case. It's a system where you have a case and then you have a adapter ring that goes onto the optic device that is variable and it just clips onto your phone. It's pretty handy.
And it's custom. So the case fits your phone and then the adapter fits your spotting scope or your binocular or whatever you're using.
And you clip them together and as a system, it puts your phone super close to the eyepiece and gets you a great image.
Yeah, so that's a really handy way of doing it. There's also universal adapters, too, that you can purchase. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't matter what your scope is. It doesn't matter what your binocular or your phone is to be able to attach them together. And so those are just some of the options and how you can start digiscoping yourself.
Yeah, it's come a long way from when I first started digiscoping.
Where you were just trying to get the camera. Just
holding my phone to my binocular while I'm pointing things. I still do that pretty frequently because I don't always have my everything all set up, but I'll still pretty frequently do that where I'll hold my phone right in there and then I get like this half moon image of a bird. But it's something you can get it's a really nice way to get an up close photo of something from a great distance, even if you don't have a really high powered camera with you.
Yeah.
So all of this is to say that we interviewed probably one of the leading experts in the world on digiscoping.
Yes.
For this episode.
Yeah, we did. So we caught up with Jeff Boughton, who is the COA Sporting Optics representative that you might meet when you're out in the field mm-hmm. or if you go to a birding festival or something like that. He posts pictures all over the place.
He does workshops for digiscoping around the world now, essentially. Yeah. He's been talking about digiscoping for years. I'll just say years. He's very knowledgeable about everything optics and everything digiscoping and how to make those two come together. Make your phone come together with your scope or your binocular.
And so we caught up with Jeff at the San Diego Birding Festival in February, and we wrangled him into doing an interview mm-hmm. for a little bit to talk about his digiscoping big year of 2023, where he is the world champion digiscoper.
If you follow our Facebook page, you'll hear much of this interview is what was broadcast on our Facebook page live. We literally just set up on a table in the middle of the trade room and said, "Hey Jeff, let's talk for a minute." And this is what we got. So strap in and listen to Jeff talk all about his big year. Okay, so hey, we are Hannah and Eric Go Birding. We are out here at the San Diego Bird Festival with Jeff Boughton from COA Sporting Optics. We kind of wanted to talk to you about your digiscoping big year, but let's start off. What are we doing here? What's going on here in San Diego today?
Well, as you know, this is the birdiest city in the U.S. So obviously we're excited to be here. This has always been kind of one of the showcase festivals that we must visit. You know, that we come to every year. In beautiful, happily sunny today, San Diego.
Much different from last year. Last year was just dumping rain the entire time.
Yeah, I was
time.
Like, did
this
I,
year, though, we got some nice.
Am I in the wrong spot? I kept saying. It's like I'd never seen that weather. It was kind of a rough patch of weather with the La Nina, I guess, that hit last year. But, no, this has been great. Great birding. Got so many just fantastic birds already. No lifers. I know some people amongst us have
some
a lifer
people in this
today.
Group, maybe, huh?
or in during the trip here, but saw a lot of great birds. I had a sort of a almost lifer I realized I hadn't seen in over 30 years, so it's like that's like a reborn
a relifer.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was Pinion Jay. And you said that was 89 was the last time you saw one.
Yeah, I wasn't going to do the math. Thanks for outing me.
You're welcome. Yeah.
I was trying to tell people this is just I whiten my hair, actually. It's not real.
So what are some of your favorite things about the San Diego Bird Festival?
Well, obviously the birding. The manic birder, that's the first thing that comes. But I mean the scenery, the weather typically, there's great food, great people, the field trips. There's so many wonderful field trips. And it's, they've got sort of a captive audience because they've got so many birds and so many habitats that they can hit. It's a real advantage, for San Diego, of course. So it's the same reason we like them.
Can I put you on the spot for your favorite restaurant? Maybe not your favorite, but a place you would recommend that we would go or anybody coming to visit would go here.
Man, you got me there.
It's hard on the spot, yeah.
I forget the name of it actually, but the little pub on the beach over here, the brewery. The Ale House.
Pacific Beach Ale House. Yeah.
Thank you. I know how to get there. I couldn't remember the name.
It's right on the main drag as you go north out of Mission Bay.
That's always nice. They get the fire pits out there. I've heard they do karaoke some nights. I don't know. I mean, so I've heard.
Anyone that knows Jeff knows karaoke is his jam, and that's.
I've got a microphone in my hands.
I feel like I have to keep slapping it down. Something's gonna start going.
Yeah. We should have put some more rules on this thing.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. So, we're here in San Diego.
Yeah.
You're gonna be speaking tomorrow,
uh-huh.
right?
Yep.
All about your digiscoping big year, setting the world record for the digiscoping big year, right?
Yeah. It was one of the, like so many, big years, mm-hmm. it wasn't a big year. And it became a lowercase big year at some point. And then I may have used the term on social media, and then that expectation was set. And so, long story short,
there was a bar set.
Yeah. By the time it finished, I guess it was a big year, even though it wasn't done in a typical big year fashion. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was doing it coming to these bird festivals, and like you guys, before vending begins or whatever, or around our field trips, running out and finding what birds I could, and then got some awesome opportunities, great invites last year beyond the typical domestic shows we mm-hmm. do. I got invited to go to the Columbia Bird Fair in Cali you know, would you be willing to come down and speak on DigiScoping? I'm like,
yeah, okay. I'd be willing. You know?
Yeah. And then, you know, we fielded a team for the Champions of the Flyway, you know, Bird Race for Conservation. And then finally, you know, sort of the surprise was being invited to speak at the International Conference for Women Birders in Uganda in December. That's the thing that was cemented it. You know, that was like, okay, all right. This is a different year.
What about that random trip to Panama right at the end there?
So that was the only non-work trip. And that was because I came back from, you know, Africa, and it was 965 bird species that I digiscoped in the course of the year. And
that's really close to a four-digit number.
It really was. And people were like, you can't stop now. You can't stop now. And I was thinking, oh, man, where am I going to go to get 35 more birds? I was looking domestically. It's like I might have been able to do it in California, but I would have to travel all over. And finally, Carlos Betancourt said, brother, get down here. Let's make this happen. Bring your son. I'm like, all right. So we went down for 2 days. And, of course, with Carlos as our guide at, you know, Canopy Family in his backyard.
Yeah, rack, you know, up the numbers, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, it was by noon the first day we'd hit the mark, and then he wound up getting us, you know, and I told, I think it had 85 new species in,
wow,
in
that's
2 days.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, so I feel like we kind of jumped into this. So would you, you know, tell everyone a little bit about yourself first?
Okay. Yeah. Well, my name's Jeff Boughton. I've been birding as long as I can remember, you know, and actually probably longer. As it seems, but it's, you already outed me on the date of my last light bird.
Were you like 3 years old when you saw that pinion jay,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. I wasn't already an adult. At any rate, moving on. So I've been a career birder most of my adult life, and then, you know, did the binocular for hire thing, you know, as a bird bum, bouncing around doing seasonal field research jobs. And then, at the festivals, you know, I mean, meeting people, and then, you know, wind up getting this gig here at, you know, as an optics representative to the Birding and Nature Markets. And I've been doing that for literally, I guess this will be my 20th year.
Oh, wow. 20 years selling optics?
Yep. That's
amazing.
And obviously now with
COA.
COA. You know, working the booth here. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. You know, I mean, we're a big family, you know, even amongst my quote unquote competitors, you know, here, we all go out to dinner together. You know, we even though our products may compete in the realm of sales, you know, it's like a road family. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing the same people every
right.
festival. It's the same.
Right. It's like,
it's the same group
weeks,
of people.
You know, yeah,
exactly.
There, right?
Yeah.
We'll have a beer. You know,
I was suggesting to Renee though that you guys should have a birding competition at each festival amongst yourselves.
I really like that idea.
I thought you would.
Challenge accepted. Thank you.
So, you're selling optics for 20 years. Uh-huh. When did you start photography? Did you start photography at all, or did you just jump right into digiscoping?
Yeah, pretty much the latter.
Okay.
You know, actually, I was always an avid birder, and I wasn't interested in photography, and especially when I started. You know, film photography was tough. You know, there was no autofocus. There was no digital anything, you know, and
you got your one roll, and then you got to
dabbled with it
and figure it out.
With it. I mean, I did it out of necessity, but I didn't really like it. And I always carried a spotting scope. I loved a spotting scope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started birding with a view through a spotting scope, you know, of a snowy owl, and that's what started me as a birder. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. In
that's a great spark bird.
That's your spark bird?
Yeah.
A snowy owl?
And it was through a spotting scope. So I always, like, appreciated that extra magnification and the level of detail that you could appreciate through that. You know, so it was natural for me. And then I was guiding professionally, so I always carried it. And I never put it down. So it was kind of natural. But way back when I was doing the Hawk Watch at Cape May, I remember some of the European guys that came over from the UK were talking about how some of the twitchers over there were using those disposable film cameras behind the eyepiece of the camera. This is back in like the mid to late 80s, right? So
like classic digiscoping, but
predated digiscoping, right? It wasn't even a thing then.
And analog photography scoping?
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know what you call that.
There's no name for it.
Film scoping.
Film scoping. Yeah.
But so I added, you know, one of those cameras to my own backpack, and I remember, I think it was 91, I can't remember now, I was guiding on Barrow, Alaska, and found a copulating pair of redneck stints, you know, and documented that, and then found later a singing temming stint up on the tundra at Barrow, you know, and I captured these really crappy pictures, you know, through one of these disposable film cameras. So,
yeah.
And then in the last 20 years, obviously, the kind of been an early pioneer, you know, in digiscoping. So it's always something that's been there, you know, it's been kind of natural and you know, it's something I enjoy. It's a type of photography that I enjoy doing, not just because the job demands it, right? So
does your job demand it, or
well,
or do you
demand might be a strong word, right? But obviously, digiscoping is one of the things that at all these festivals people are kind of fascinated with. They struggle with, and a lot of the questions that we get in optics, you know, are, you know, how can I take better pictures, or you know, my spotting scope, and you know, or even binoculars. So, yeah.
Well, and that's the beauty of it, that you can, you know, rather than buying a DSLR, you can have the scope that is multi-use and then just use your phone for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I love it.
You've always got your phone, right? You know, everyone's always got their phone. And, you know, that old adage, that the best camera is the one you have on you, right? You know, so naturally, that's pretty simple, you know, just pull it out and stick it on.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. The best piece of equipment to use is the best camera, best binocular, best scope, whatever it is the one you have with you.
Right? Yeah. And
you spend $1 million on something and leave it in the closet, it doesn't do any good.
Nope. True, too. And the other thing, too, is, I mean, the phone cameras have gotten so good.
Oh, tell me
so
about
good.
It.
You know, as you know, I mean, you know, I mean, people are shooting film, and we did a TV interview at the Space Coast Bird and Wildlife Festival. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the last one we attended, and the guy had the big camera, said, I'm just going to shoot this segment on my phone, you know.
clips his phone right into the tripod and says, here we go, crazy. We're doing for that. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been a real game changer, and it's made the process, I think, of digiscoping a lot easier, and the results are consistently better, so people are happy about it, you know, and it's been it's a lot more accessible to everybody, I think, you know, especially knowing you can do it through binocular as well, you know.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of underutilized, the binocular, because you can definitely just set your binocular on something. So, you know, you're not shaky like me. I'm shaky when I'm using my binoculars.
Yeah, I'm super shaky.
And then, yeah, just there's a fence post everywhere. Just set it on there, put your phone on, and you're set.
The other spot where I use that a lot, though, because I'm so shaky, I'll put it on the video mode, right? And I shoot in the highest res video, and I'll just shoot a video and kind of be panning along like this. And to watch the video, you'd get sick, you know, you'd be...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's so shaky. But you can, you know, scroll through and find a good frame, take a screenshot, and you got documentation of, you know, a bird flying over or whatever.
Yeah.
So
you get, like, in between four or five flaps, and one flap is like, oh, now you can actually see the belly on that.
Yeah.
All right, there we go.
Or look, there's the wing tip.
Steal that one. Yeah,
exactly. So it works well.
So what are your tips for budding digiscopers?
Ooh. Well, try it. Have fun with it, obviously, it would be first and foremost. You know, there's a learning curve. We put a lot of our trained secret stuff online through our webinars and things that are posted up there. So we've given away all the secrets. So there's no secrets left. So there's no excuse.
Yeah,
the rest is just practice.
You can go to the COA Facebook pages, both COA Sporting Optics and COA Sporting US.
Yeah.
And it has all sorts of tutorials on there, right?
Well, at least links to. They're
links
mostly
to
hosted on our YouTube page.
On the YouTube page,
right. So we got a YouTube channel as well.
Okay.
And, you know, all that stuff's there. But, boy, I give talks that are an hour long. How long do we have?
Not that long.
Yeah. You know, the best thing, the most, I think, best tip you can offer, obviously knowing your equipment, you know, and knowing how to use your equipment is key. So a solid connection between the eyepiece and the phone is huge.
Yeah.
Having a stable platform, a good tripod if you're on your spotting scope is good. But then, you know, the other tricks, you know, do you know how to use autofocus, auto exposure lock, you know, on your phone?
Yeah.
You like hold it until that comes on, and then you can literally, once the focus stops searching, then you can use the wheel on the scope, you know, to fine tune the your focus, you know, or if there's branches in front, you can focus past those, you know, and get your bird in focus.
Yeah, rather than fighting two different focuses trying to fight
exactly.
at the same time.
And
yeah.
then you get it in and, it, you know, it's going away
it
from
panics,
you.
It panics, yeah.
And the other aspect of that is then you've got exposure compensation just by, you know, sliding
just
your finger up and
up,
down. So you can get your exposure right on the bird. And that those two tricks alone will improve most people. Like, I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know I could do that on my phone. And it's a game changer. It's like, you know,
suddenly things are working
100%
better.
Yeah.
So we did have a question come in. Okay. Did you try many different types of scopes before settling on one being better for digiscoping?
So obviously I work for COA, yeah. Right? So I use COA scopes.
You've got a built-in bias.
Yes, obviously. But we do have a lot of different scope sizes and things. And as the rep, I have them all. So it's kind of, I feel like a golfer. It's like, you know, for this shot, I think I'm going to use the 66 millimeter. It's, you know, a little lighter. I'm going to climb an incline. And
do you have a caddy?
Not too terribly dark, so I don't need the light gathering of the 99.
You should have a scope caddy to follow along.
I don't think you can go wrong. You know, obviously the higher the quality of the scope, obviously, the better the images. You know, in any digiscoping or photography system, the quality of the end product is going to only, it's going to be limited by the weakest link, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to exceed the expectation. So, you know, spotting scopes start at hundreds of dollars and go up to over 4,000 and everywhere in between. And at the highest end, you know, the resolution's much better, you mm-hmm. know, and the detail can get. It's the same in normal photography lenses, you know, you can get, you know, the 400 f2.8, whatever it, that you have to mortgage your house for, and sure. you can buy one for $150, and somewhere in between there might be where most people are going to fall on that. So yeah. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. Obviously, the best equipment you can afford is better, and not just because I'm an optics rep, because it's more because I love optics, and I've personally gone through this. I've proven that it's, you know, always the best optics you can afford is the best option. They're going to treat you better, especially if there's a passion to something you're doing and you want to have the best experience in the field. But moreover, I will say it's harder to get away with a less expensive spotting scope and be happy with the resolution and the results, because more magnification generally gives you less wiggle room, you know. You have to have a certain level of prior resolution to be happy with the results. So I find that usually it's sort of, you know, maybe that $1,000 price point and up mm-hmm. is where you're going to get, you know, start to see results that you're happy with all the time. I mean, I hate to say that, because, you know, people say, well, I want to, hey, this is my budget.
Yeah.
And if it is, great. But you just have to be realistic that, you know, that
of what you're going to get
is not going to be as good as the top end, you know, and it's more obvious as you increase magnification, because flaws in the glass and the lower end glass is going to be more obvious, right?
Well, and it'll also be relatively obvious in photography and videos on your phone, especially like you were saying with the higher end, like phones, like the new iPhones, the new Samsung phones, like all of them have these dozens of megapixel cameras you're going to see the issues with your scope through it. So, even with the highest end scope, you're going to see some of those issues anyways.
Of course. And, you know, I mean, there's no wrong answer to that. And the best thing is have fun, but just don't get frustrated, you know, if you have that lower gear, you know, lower end gear, you can still do it. You can still have fun. You can still get nice pictures, but you know, you don't compare them to someone that's shooting through a scope that's 10 times the price of yours. You know, I mean,
just like other photography.
Yeah.
So someone that went out and spent $15,000 on a prime lens,
right.
So you only have $100 to spend. Like you're not gonna have the same resolution quality.
Hopefully you will see a difference. You may, right?
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah.
at least, but you
can still get really good photos.
Yeah.
It just
you
can't compare apples to apples at that point.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly.
So what was probably your biggest surprise about your big year?
I mean, honestly, that it got to be such a big year in the first place, because I had never any intention of doing that. You know, in 2020 was the first time I ever started keeping track. You know, we were all locked down, and so I was looking for new. I knew my year list was not going to be the same, because I'm not going to travel all over the country and stuff, sitting at home for the first time. So I started keeping track of how many birds that I was shooting. And as the year went on, and just by March, you know, I was like pushing 500 bird species at the end of, I guess, no, that's April, but like by mid-April, I'm like, there's a lot of birds.
Yeah.
I wonder how big this list could get. And honestly, it was probably that more than anything, because again, it was not something I decided, I'm going to go out and do this.
Because you weren't talking about big year or anything like that when we were at Champions of the Flyway.
No.
You weren't like, oh, I'm going to try to this or that or this or that. It was just keeping track, normal track.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we were getting pretty high. then, because we had 100 and some on our, or yeah, almost 100 on our day.
Yeah. And we were like, what, 96, 98? Yeah, I can't remember. Like that. 98? Yeah. And then we found one that we should have put on after the fact.
After the fact, yeah.
Yeah, that's the fun, too. You got a documentation. It's like, hey, look.
Wait a minute.
Look in the background. What's that?
Look at that. That's another one. Yeah. We misidentified that one as a different. Yeah.
Oops. Well, it's not exactly our backyard, right?
We did
our
best. Yeah, for sure.
We did okay.
So that was your biggest surprise. What was your like biggest miss, that something that you thought you were gonna get, or maybe it wasn't a miss, maybe you ended up getting it, but
you missed Mockingbird.
Yeah. No, the biggest miss it's so easy.
Painted bunting?
No. It was Eurasian moorhen.
Eurasian moorhen.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'd gotten Gallinule the first week. I guess I just assumed I looked past them. I was like, yeah, I got you already, because it looks the same, And I couldn't believe it. At the end of the year, I'm like, how? And then I went back. I'm scrolling through our pictures from, the Champions of the Flyaway.
That's
when I went to Rutland
there.
Waters, and during bird fair.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's got to be a moorhen picture somewhere. Nope.
No moorhen. And so when did you find out that you didn't have a moorhen? After the first of the year?
Yeah, that was like November, December maybe.
It was too late to go back.
Well, no, it was even before Africa, so I thought maybe, like a final chance, And I did have a few reprieves that I got, at that final trip to Africa. Like, I remember on the day we had Eurasian bee eaters,
European bee eaters
going over, and we could
never
get one in the scope, but they were coming over all day. I finally, Africa, I was like, oh, reprieve, I was going to add that one.
Big full-frame shots and everything?
Oh, yeah, of course. Stunning. Eyeball pictures.
Eyeball pictures, yeah.
Yeah, I was having trouble with bee eaters when we were in West Africa because we were so close to them.
Oh.
Like, I couldn't get the whole bird in focus.
Trying to scope them, it was literally a full head.
Yeah, I didn't have that problem.
It's not a problem you normally have.
Yeah, especially with something like a bee eater. Something that's flighty like that.
Mod. I'd give you a mod, maybe.
I was carrying the 99.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that extra power.
Yeah, you
got to
go back a mile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just keep stepping back.
Yeah. That's what I did for a while. I was tripping over the brush.
That's where the 66 comes in handy. A little closer.
Closer focus, yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so do you think you're going to try it again?
Never.
Never. Next year?
It was fun. Like I said, I didn't intend to do it. And it was, I would say, would have been like at the Global Bird Fair in August was the first time that kind of changed my focus, literally and figuratively on this. When people from around the world could say, how's your big year going? I'm like, what?
Big year?
What are you talking about? I mean, I put, hey, man, I'm up to X number of birds that I've digiscoped this year. This is great, but... I don't remember ever physically uttering that word before that, but then all these people around the world were aware of what I was doing and interested in. I'm like, now I feel okay. Now
you've got to make it real.
Yeah, the bar has been, the glove has been thrown. Whatever the gauntlet, whatever that.
Yeah.
So I felt like, okay, I got to make this happen now. And then I just totally became manic.
Yeah.
And I kind of hated the way I was
at right at the end
because,
yeah.
I'm ignoring. Great birds, Oh, yeah. I got you already. No, gotta find you. And, the ultimate, slap in the face was I'm at 999 down in Panama. I was down there and a little bird popped up and it's not really great looking little bird, It's a dot winged ant wren. And I'm like, nope. Not going to shoot you. You can't be 1,000. And I became that guy, that snobby guy.
Oh, no.
And I felt so bad after that. I went down the road to where the white-tailed trogon, and I waited him out to make him,
make
the 1,000th bird,
yeah.
And I was like, damn, dot-winged ant-wren did not deserve that.
What did ant-wren ever do? I am better than that.
I thought I'd made it up the next day. I was so really mad at myself for that moment. And I was like, wait, I remember Carlo said something fantastic. I don't remember what it was now. He said, God, Jeff. I'm like, no, I got a dot winged ant wren. I got to make it up to it. And I shoot it. And I'm like, okay, I felt great. I get back at lunch, and I tell Carlos, I said, my dot winged ant wren, it had white flanks. So it wound up being the white flanked ant wren. And I still wound up dissing the poor
dot winged
ant wren.
Still nothing.
That. So I didn't like being that birder. I I'm at a point now, I was, you know, certainly as a younger man, you know, I was like so intense. Just and I'm list, still pretty intense, panic, you know.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy, I love to enjoy every bird, you know, and see something like, you know, a house sparrow doing something I've never seen it do. It's like, wow, that's really intriguing. What is that bird doing? You know, I mean,
yeah,
I prefer that. So I don't think I would ever do a big year again. I swear I'd never do it in the first place. And somehow I got caught up in it. But
you got strong-armed into it halfway through the year.
I don't know. Yeah,
well, you get to a point of birding, everybody asks you if you're going to do a big year.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, I'm constantly getting asked.
Yeah, we get asked that all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Which with no intention of doing a big year.
I mean, I'd only do a global big year and only with prioritizing women guides in every place. Yeah. So if anyone wants to contribute to my GoFundMe. But yeah, it's a lot of time and effort and dedication, and especially with what you're doing, because I mean, there's no like how do you categorize or how do you keep track of all the species that you were seeing? I mean, 1,000 species, like eBird.
Excel.
Okay.
Excel.
Yeah, I like
one step above written notes.
Yeah, no, I just that was my way, because even on eBird, you can, you know, put your birds in there, we'll keep track of. Unfortunately, I'm shooting videos a lot of time and taking screenshots because I'm not one of the select few that are allowed to post videos.
It's really easy to get access.
I've asked. They said, yeah, Jeff, whatever. But anyway, so I take screenshots. But the problem is it doesn't have the EIXF data, and it doesn't count it as showing up as that year. It shows that you didn't get it. That year's
interesting.
Weird.
That's interesting. Huh.
Yeah, I don't know. So I tried that for a while, and it wasn't showing up. And then that was a lot of my birds. So then I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to do this manually somehow.
Yeah.
So I just started at the end of each day. I got in the habit. I'd pull out my phone because they're all on the phone. I'd go, so you, add it on.
Yeah.
And then I could easily search that, you know, and cross reference. Like, have I seen that? You know, by the end, I was like, no idea.
No idea.
Did you see that? Yeah. Was that last year? It's horrible.
Yeah. So well, it's like what you're saying about the big year getting manic, and at the end it's just becoming a slog. I have heard that so many times from big year birders that especially you get to like October, November, December, and it's literally just ticking boxes and you're so focused in on that that it's you lose the enjoyment of the of the whole reason you started in the first place.
Exactly. And so, you know, it was fun.
Yeah.
I set a bar, and again, it wasn't a true big year, you know, in the classic sense. I was not going out looking for birds. It's a testament to all these great bird festivals.
Yeah, that's
you know, and
true.
Birding events. Because
that's true, that's the majority of your birding is at festivals.
You know,
San Diego,
they were
Rio
all
Grand
birding
Valley,
events except for the last 2 days when, you know, I took a personal trip to Panama or in my home county. You know, all the rest were just my home county, my birding in between, you know, you know, but it was amazing, you know, that all of a sudden all that can kind of happen. And granted, I had some great opportunities, great invites with the international stuff, but even domestically, you know, I mean,
Do you know what your number was for the U.S. Continental? Well, I guess all ABA because you did some Alaska stuff,
though.
Too.
It wasn't that great, though, because I didn't get to Alaska. I only had one trip.
Oh, you didn't go to Alaska last year.
No, and I only had one trip to the West Coast at all, as a matter of fact, for here at San Diego. And as you already pointed out, it rained
the
every
whole time.
Day. Yeah. So that really impacted negatively, you know, how many. And plus, I wasn't doing a big year then.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you,
I was
you were just
so when it was
just
horrific rain, I looked outside, like, I'm going to work on my computer today, which if I'd been doing a big year, I'd be like, nope. Rain gear, got to go out. You got to get the birds. Got to
find something.
Got to make it happen. You know.
Well, you did get the yellow-billed loon, though, right?
Yeah.
Last year?
Yeah. From the booth.
From the booth, right here?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I spotted it from the booth through the windows. Like, that now is my best bird I've ever seen from physically the booth at any venue. That's my best rarity from booth.
Yeah. There you go, San Diego. We got that working for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, is there any other questions online? Do we have any other questions on the list for Jeff?
Let me banter for a moment, and I'll take a look. Was all my questions I had for Jeff.
Sure. Not good. Yeah, that's good. Happy to answer. I'm glad we got them all.
This is terrible banter.
Is that terrible banter?
I didn't say it was good. Hey, you guys are the professionals. I'm sorry. I'm doing my best.
I'm not a professional. We say it at the beginning of the episode, we're not professionals.
Oh.
We just have microphones
and
we talk
to them. You are the experienced ones. Now, if we were singing, if we're doing karaoke, I have your back. What do you want to hear?
It'd be like next 6 hours.
Nothing. No.
Sounds of silence?
Much better banter. Silence. Anyways.
I've had a few requests, but I'm going to sing anyways. Here I come.
Here we go.
Thank you. We'll be here all week.
That was all the questions we had for awesome. Jeff. So
yeah, do you have anything you want to tell us about digiscoping, about big gearing, anything?
No, not about big gearing. I'm not a big gearer. like I said,
digiscoping, man. Anything about digiscoping that we haven't touched on? Using scopes,
you know,
like that?
Come and see us at a festival. Yeah. If you have questions, we're at the booth, and it's one of the most common questions. You know, there's always at least one, seminar at each of these festivals.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we can do a digiscoping trip with you guys.
Hey, that'd be fun.
You want to do it?
Yeah, I would be up for that.
Let's do it. Let's set one up.
I need to get a better phone, though. What are you carrying, 16?
No, I'm 14 Pro Max. I'm happy with that.
Okay. Yeah, I got 13.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. It'll work.
Yeah.
It'll get the job done. It's still a lot of megapixels.
Yeah, it is. True. It's more than you probably really need. You know, I mean, it's a sensor.
Especially when you put it on the nice. You put it on a nice scope, and you're...
Yeah.
That's where most of the work's being done anyways.
Our friend Herbert has already asked me to come and do a digiscoping tour in Uganda.
I bet he is.
Would you be interested?
Of course.
It's like, I know people that might be willing to come and help lead
that.
That'd
be fun, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking time. I know you're super busy. Booth is busy. There's probably 100 people standing in line waiting to talk to you over there.
Yeah, and congratulations on your not a big year.
Yes, non-big year that became big.
Your lowercase big year.
Lowercase big year.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, though, if anyone ever tried to do this, the reason it's a world record is, as near as I can tell, no one's ever been stupid enough to even consider doing
it. To try
this.
To take that many digiscope photos.
Like, has anyone ever done more digiscope? Like, you count them? What? You know, what are you talking about? So maybe, you know, I've set a low bar. I think it's for a global year,
for
sure.
Global,
I mean,
because
Columbia's example, you know, we didn't get away from the booth much. And I think in total I had like 130 species or something, you know.
Oh yeah, you could have done better.
By Columbia standards, that's nothing.
Yeah,
that's pennies. That's like the first day on a real birding trip. So if you were going for it and doing it, someone should be able to bury that.
Oh yeah.
Mark easily. So I've set a bar, and I'm looking forward to someone crushing it.
Okay, we'll give it a try.
All right.
Yeah.
Challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining
appreciate
us.
Appreciate you. It's good seeing you guys as always.
So there were a couple misses that we were present for that I don't think Jeff mentioned, that now, you know, thinking about the parts of the big year we were there for, because we, you know, went to Jordan with him and we were in England with him. He missed the Sinai rose finch in Jordan because we weren't allowed to take our optics.
We couldn't have any optics. Oh man, that was exciting. Anyway, I just started reminiscing about that.
I know. And then ruddy shell duck.
Yeah.
Which, these were two that we got I didn't get the Sinai rose finch.
I got the Sinai rose finch.
You got a digiscope picture of it?
No, it was just a picture through my phone.
Well, yeah, because you couldn't get... Because
I didn't have binoculars.
Anyways,
I used my phone to take a picture, yeah.
Anyways, so yeah, those were a couple misses, obvious misses.
Obvious misses.
At least from my short perspective of doing part of the digiscoping big year with him.
Well, we were there with him in San Diego when it started.
Yeah.
And then...
We should have had a kickoff thing, you know?
Hit first 2024. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Anyways, you know, I really appreciated Jeff's mentality and how he views the birds, and he, you know, was trying to get specific birds for specific, you know, numbers of his big year, and then coming to the realization that, like, no, every bird's important.
Yeah, we've had this discussion. I think we've had this discussion on the podcast before, but we've had this discussion at least amongst ourselves numerous times, that there are different phases that many people will go through as they're birding, as you become obsessive about one thing or another, or maybe you never become obsessive and you just kind of do this one thing, or you just kind of transition and shift and mold, and everything is fluid.
Evolve.
It's ever evolving, ever changing of the way people think about themselves and the way people think about birding and how they relate to birding. Mm-hmm. And it's especially talking with somebody who just finished a quote unquote big year, or I guess we could just call it a large year. When someone, cause he was big about, it's not a big year. It wasn't a capital B big year.
His year in digiscoping.
His large year of digiscoping. But you talking with him about that, you can hear as beginning of the year, there's things changed as he self-reflected throughout the year and realized things about himself. And we've talked to a couple other big year birders that it's the same thing, that things change and you realize things about yourself, about the way you're treating yourself, the way you're treating the birds around you, and the way you're kind of behaving. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but it's just a lot of self-reflection because you're spending all this time basically alone, like thinking about this stuff. So yeah. We've talked a lot about that and how we approach birding and all that.
Well, and you know, after we talked to Jeff, of course, we're together 24/7, so we do a lot of talking. And I've said it for a couple of years that if I did a big year, I'd want to do the global big year. And because, I mean, there are relatively few people that have done a global big year. Mm-hmm. And also, it sounds like an incredible adventure.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to limit myself to just the U.S. Of course, you know.
What about Clatsop County? Just Clatsop County.
Oh, my gosh, no. Anyways, so it's a huge investment. It's a huge, you know, amount of mm-hmm. time and money and carbon footprint and all that stuff.
Yeah.
If, you know, all those things weren't a factor, I would love to do like a global big year that is, and I mentioned this in the interview, yeah. that only to hire only women guides to show like how many cool, amazing women guides there are around the world and how it's becoming more and more common to see women guides.
Yeah. It is based on your other podcast, Women Birds Happy Hour. You've talked to enough guides that you may not have connections everywhere, but there are women that are guiding around the world.
Well, and I think
in pretty much every single country.
And I think it would be enough of a challenge too, because there are a lot of gaps
yeah.
in places where I'm not, you know, able to find women birders. And maybe it's because I don't speak a language and it's hard for me to like search things out like that, you know, cause I don't speak Italian. And so it's hard for me. Like I have a lot of trouble finding like any, like a lot of Europe. I have trouble finding women guides
okay.
or at least women birders in a lot yeah. of Europe, mostly, you know, language barrier. And we just aren't, you know, part of the same
social circles.
Yeah, I guess so. But anyways, we've talked about how, or I came to the realization the other day that like, I don't even care what the number would be, like yeah. my birding number, because that wouldn't be the important part.
The number of guides would probably be.
Well, it would be the connection yeah. with all of yeah, these different true, people yeah. and, you know, kind of sharing the stories that they have as much as, you know, possible and mm-hmm. they'd allow or anything. But I would definitely want to be like, have a good number, a good birding number. But then I think if, you know, I came home and my number was like 4,000, I wouldn't feel like a failure.
Yeah.
Because like, it's more than just birds. Oh, you know, yeah. there's a lot to doing that sort of thing. And it was fun to hear Jeff's kind of like wrap up about his big year, mm-hmm. his, you know, little
his large year. Yeah.
And, kind of some of the revelations he came to.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Jeff, for taking the time to talk with us. I know you were very busy, and your booth was hopping the whole time.
Yeah,
the whole optics area was hopping the whole time, and we pulled him away during prime time for his negotiating and talking and making sure people are getting the optics they want. He wasn't at his booth, so we really appreciate the time that you took to talk with us. It really means a lot to us, and I'm sure. Hopefully our audience really appreciates what Jeff has to say, because it's insightful and it's very, very interesting. And then thank you guys all for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and or learned something new. Please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Music, or anywhere else you listen to us. If you would like to connect with us on the socials, you can follow us at Hannah Goes Birding and Eric Goes Birding on Instagram, our Facebook page, Hannah and Eric Go Birding. You can email us at hannahandericgobirding@gmail.com, our website, www.gobirdingpodcast.com. We also have a TikTok and an X, basically Hannah and Eric Go Birding.
It's, and a blue sky. And a blue sky. Threadless or
it's
whatever.
Socials.
Threads.
Follow us on the socials. And it's Hannah and Eric Go Birding or some variation of that. Tell us what you think and share the love of birding with your friends.